right, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of Racks, Fur, and Feathers. I am your host, Brent Ruff. Today, we sat down with Ryan Johnson, who is my brother from another mother. he was our neighbor growing up, and he was my brother's best friend through high school, so he's been a big brother to me forever. And he was also there with me the day the DNR came knocking at my door. That's right. So that's what this episode is about. So without further ado, episode 10 with my brother, Ryan Johnson. All right. So we're giving the new equipment here. It's maiden voyage. We've got three microphones now.
Brand new and shiny mixer.
One asshole hasn't pointed right at him.
I didn't fucking touch nothing. This is your cat. Who's fucking it? Not me.
Oh, my God.
That voice you hear over there is my brother, Ryan Johnson. Illegitimate brother. Friend of the family forever. Lived down the road. Get off your goddamn phone. What are you doing?
Shut it off.
Got me all distracted.
Double checking everything.
Right. Got to make sure everything's all buttoned up. So, yes. Ryan Johnson. He actually grew up sort of, I wouldn't say next door, because it's not like...
It's in front of.
Yeah, in front of little bit next door. So he was our neighbor growing up. So he's been around forever. My brother's best friend, Bobby. And today, what we're going to talk about is how I made a... What would you call that, Ryan?
Tactical error.
A tactical error.
In decision-making abilities.
That's true.
It's a clever way to put it.
Right. I made a tactical error that has led to, some negative, but a lot of positive, and that's kind of why we're sitting here right now. So, I've been trying to figure out how I want to start this.
How do you ease into that pool? Right. Dip your little toe in first, you just dive right in.
I'll start it. So, we're over at Popsy's house.
Story time.
We're all hanging out. You know, Bert's there, I'm there. I don't remember what we were doing there. I think we went over there for something. I don't remember what it was, but we were all over there and just laughing and talking. Bob is talking about the DNR and how strict they've got with tickets and infractions and violations and how they don't give anybody a pass anymore. And he's going on and on about it with some friend of his that got off work and ran out in his tree stand, forgot his license, and got asked by the DNR to provide it for him, and he didn't have it in his truck. So they went back to the truck and whatever, and the guy was like, well, no problem, I understand stuff happens and you're in a big hurry, whatever. So he goes back and he says, here's your ticket. He says, oh, okay. So kind of started the thing. So me and Bert go back to his house after that whole thing happened. And then we're sitting there in the living room, and Bert says, the DNR's out there looking at your truck. I was like, looking at my truck? What the hell is my truck doing? So we go out there, and I walked outside, and they walked up to me and said, are you Brent Ruff? And I said, nope. He be inside. Right. I'll go get him right now.
I am not, but I know where he is.
So here I am. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm you know, like I said, giving Ryan shit, like, because he was kind of parked in the grass across the street. I'm like, dipshit, they're going to come give you a ticket now. You better get out there. And then I see Ryan walk to the end of my yard. The DNR officers meet him at the end of the yard. Ryan turns around, looks at the house, and points. And then they all three start walking towards the door. And then I knew right then and there. It was something I did. Now, this was, what was that? That was 2015. So this was August 2015. What they were there for was something I did in 2014. So they come up to the door and made sure I was Brent Ruff, you know. And they said, so, did you shoot a deer last year? And I said, well, not knowing what to do, really, because I knew I was in trouble for something. I didn't know what yet. So, so by shoot, you mean, like, killed it and found it? And, I mean, like, just trying to buy time. Sounded like a fucking idiot. So, he says, yeah. So, yeah, I shot one. And, well, you didn't buy a tag last year.
Uh-oh.
Oh. So, this is where my 26-year-old at the time self was like, oh, well, I didn't think you had to.
Oh, my God.
And his answer was...
Adam's choking on sauce.
His answer was, this isn't Indiana. You don't have landowner privileges.
Now, yeah, well, now let me back that up.
That's
what happened. That's the initial. Now, I gotta back way up to what actually happened. So, back in 2014... The DNR they started this base tag program shit. So it used to be like $13, $14, what was it, right, for a combo tag?
Right. Yeah, I think it was 14.
Yeah, something sure, like that. And then like each doe tag, it wasn't much, like $5, $7.
$7, I believe.
Right. So you can, you know, kill five deer for, you know,
reasonably cheap.
Right. it had been like that for a while. Well, this base tag, what that meant was, so your base tag is your new small game license. There is no small game license now.
Right.
So what it is, you pay the $11 for the base license, and you have to get your base license before you get anything else as a resident. Oh, thank you, sir. Bud Light Orange, huh? So you have to get a base license before you get anything. Fishing license, trapping license, anything. So everybody was kind of bitter about that, you know. Me, in particular, looked at it like, oh, that's the state just trying to...
The man coming down on you.
To you.
Right. So, not only was it $11 for a base license now on top of your tags, but the tags went up. So now it ended up being, it was just shy of $50 to get a combo tag as a resident in the state of Michigan. And I said, fuck that. I wasn't going to do it.
Didn't have the money at the time?
I did not have the money at the time. I was in the middle of switching jobs. It was just, times were tough. And on top of that, I had heard that you didn't need one on private land.
Okay.
Now, I took that, I knew, I probably should have looked into that a little bit more, knew it wasn't true, but that's what I was going to tell the DNR if I ever get caught. Now, that's exactly what I tried to do. Yeah, it didn't work out so well.
As a side note, it is the hunter's responsibility to be familiar with the regulations, because the DNR are absolutely familiar with the regulations, and they would love nothing more than to see you having a good time following all the rules. If you're not following the rules, they'd love nothing more than to hem you up. Yeah, it's an education for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, so I didn't have the money. I should have fucking done it. But the whole private land thing, that was my excuse. But I had actually heard that, but it was in
Indiana.
It was for Indiana. Indiana.
Landowners, people that reside in the home, and farmers that actually farm.
They have to have over property. X amount of acres, like 100 acres.
You don't
or something.
Need a license. All you have to do is write down the landowner's name, phone number,
okay,
tax ID. But that's Indiana,
right?
Not Michigan.
Yeah, so.
We do not live in Indiana currently. This is back then. Well, you didn't either, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
What it was.
So. Ooh, excuse me. So I just ran with it, you know. That's gonna be my excuse, and I say that. And if you're thinking of me as an asshole right now, I can promise you there is thousands of people that probably still do that really shouldn't. Hopefully, this episode will make them think twice, because I mean, you know how it is, man. All these deer camps, people go up there. It's just like everybody's got a pool of tags.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You didn't get one. Well, I got three, so how about I...
Right, can I buy your tag from you or whatever? Which isn't necessarily legal, it's not on the up and up, but in real life, these things happen.
Right, so that was just my mindset, and I never really paid much attention to the DNR's rules and regs. Never looked into where that money is actually going.
They use it for? Or...
Right. So I was, you know, fuck that, being a stubborn fucking brick that I am, I wasn't going to do it.
26-year-old American male.
Right.
So you...
trying to raise a family, you know, but that was the thing. Like, I can't afford that $50 right now, but I need to put that meat on the table.
Right.
So, in that aspect, you know, and it wasn't like I went out there and I violated, you know, the rules other than not buying a tag. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I went out there and shot 50 deer. It wasn't like I was going out at night with a spotlight or.
Right. You had good intentions.
It was
sort of
harvested almost legally.
Almost.
Almostly. The word almost is where the...
You got to tell them how you actually got busted.
I'm still going. So I didn't buy a tag that season. I always bought a tag. Didn't that year. So the season starts. October came and went. It was an average October. I hadn't shot one yet. So early October, the rut was really starting to come into full swing. And... I shot a night. Yeah, everybody's trying the Bud Light Orange now.
Pinkies up.
So I shoot me a nice 8-point. Nice 8-point. And that was November 2nd. Mm-hmm. and
you had to chase it halfway across the world. You had to earn.
No,
it
not there. That one. Sure that was a different. He did have white feet, but that was the one you're thinking of was a different year. So like I said, that one had white feet. So we took all these pictures and shit. Well, that season came and went. Everything was done. Ate the deer. It had the rack laying around wherever. Mind you, we're in August now of 2015, just before the next season. And one of my buddies was like, hey, you should put your trail cam pictures of all these piebald deer you have on this Michigan buck poll on Facebook. Was doing asking for trail cam pictures and this and that of unique ones, you know. And he's like, and you should throw those hooves on there from that deer you shot the year before. I'm like, that's a great idea. Let's do that.
And this is where the trouble
begins.
On
a public forum. That's the perfect place for that shit. Well, mind you, I usually always bought a tag. I totally had, at that point, spaced out. I had even bought, I didn't buy one. So I put the trail cam pictures up there. I put the picture of the hooves and with the caption, last year's kill.
Oh, boy.
It just so happened the order of the pictures that I put onto that website, the actual post, the picture that stood out, you know, in front with the caption, last year's kill, was the main, right, that stuck out. And I'm assuming the DNR must audit that, because that was on a Saturday about noon, and it was 4 o'clock on a Sunday when they came to my door when Ryan was there. And they knew everything. Because I tried pulling that private land bullshit. Ryan reminded me of that.
I was just shaking my head like, nah, they're here for a reason. Right. They know exactly what you did. They got all they shit in a row.
And they really did. They told me where I shot it, when I shot it, what I shot it with. And mind you, there was no other pictures online other than that picture of the feet. They knew everything.
So when they show up, suffice it to say, they've already done their homework.
They're there for a reason. Yep. There's no reason to lie to them.
If they're asking for you by name, they're probably giving you a chance to either tell them the truth or to cleverly lie to them, in which case they would know that you're in for some trouble.
Well, I told him the private land deal, and obviously that didn't go over well. So then he's like, Ryan said, dude's like, really? Yeah. How long have you been hunting?
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, that's what Ryan called him.
Mr. Rogers. He looked like Mr. Rogers. Very nice guy. Can't remember what his name was.
Very trusting. Yeah. Because he's...
He just like looked at you intently and listened like, really?
Yeah.
Okay, no, never mind.
Let you dig your own hole.
That's pretty much what happened. Because I was like, you know, I knew they had me dicked. So I just, you know, look, man. I couldn't afford a tag. I needed to put meat on the table.
Right.
I was stupid. I made a mistake. You know, I'm sorry. But yeah, I shot a deer. I didn't buy a tag. I was completely honest with him, which inevitably saved my ass.
Big time.
And they thanked me for that. He says, you know, you don't know how many people we get that we knock on their doors and they don't answer. They slam the door in our face.
Right.
They avoid us. He's like, when you do that, you're not helping yourself out at all.
Because
if we're knocking on your
tone.
Door, we're there for, like you said, we're there for a reason.
Right, yeah. Like Ryan said, they know what they're doing when they get there. They come with the intent to either prosecute you for this crime or, you know, figure out what's going on with your situation, depending on what's going on. But they don't usually just stop and talk to somebody for fun. They always have a purpose to be there. Mm-hmm. The DNR are... specifically trained to deal with people like that.
And they could have been nasty, too. I mean, they could have took
absolutely
his bow. They could have took his gun. They could have took
everything. They made sure they told him
that,
too.
They could have confiscated every deer antler in that place, but they didn't. They were only there for that one specific thing because he was cooperative.
Right. And they're honest, and they tend to be more lenient. I mean, you're making their job and their life easier.
Right.
So.
Obviously, it's a lot more work for them. If you wanted to be a dick about it and deny everything, they would have to prove. The burden of proof lies on the state. So it would be up to them to prove that you did all this, even if they already knew what you had done and where and with what gun or whatever, what bow or whatever. They would have a lot more running around and paperwork and all this other stuff to do to figure out how to properly prosecute you, where, you know, being honest speeds up the process. It's less work for them to do. It's less hassle for you. And in the end, honesty is always the best policy. You got treated the way that you did, but you feel like you did a little bit better because you were honest with them.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know?
And they can tell if you're remorseful or not.
Right, yeah.
And I was honest, man. I just told them what happened. Like, look, dude, I just,
Listen, everybody's got a story, man. Every situation's different, and you know, you messed up. You fessed up to it.
Yep, you screwed up. Be a man. Sack up.
That's right.
Pay your repentance and move on.
Take your lumps.
Life goes on.
So, they're there that day. They confiscate the rack. after I admitted it. They took that and they took it for measurements. And let me explain why they did that.
This is the not fun part.
Yeah, this is where I started to really get scared. Because now, like, here, I'm shaking, man.
Right.
I'm like, oh, yeah. Shit.
Dealing
like,
with a man anytime.
Well, not only that, I should back up even farther, man. I mean, I got deer tracks tattooed on my arm. When I was a kid, I fell in love with this shit when I was little. And you remember this, Ryan? When I was a kid, I'd go out there without a gun and just sit with my deer call. Constantly, all summer long.
Rattling antlers and deer calls.
Yep, and then all through the fall, just to see them and get good at calling them in.
Right.
Like, hunting was my life. But I didn't take the time to pay attention to the right shit, you know, the rules and regs and everything like that, and you know, just rolling with the redneck.
Yeah.
And it bit me in the ass, you know. So at this point I'm shaking because they take the rack and they're, so I'm like, okay, so what now? I'm for sure gonna have to spend some time out of the woods automatically.
Right.
I just don't know how long, or you know, you hear horror stories of people getting their rights for life taken away.
Yep.
Obviously didn't want that to happen. So that's when I asked, as Ryan says, Mr. Rogers, I says, so what happens now? He says, well, we're gonna take the rack and we're going to measure it, because last year Michigan installed a trophy clause. What the trophy clause is, so basically you have, if you shoot a deer without a tag now, if it's a doe, you get $1,000 restitution and some fine. I think it's another $1,000 on top of that. It's like basically $2,000 and you're off the hook and you're out of the woods for 3 years.
Right.
If you shoot a buck under an 8-point, it was $1,000 fine, $1,000 restitution, 5 years out of the woods. If you shot a buck over an 8-point, it was $1,000 fine, $1,000 restitution, $500 a point.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. 5 years out of the woods and 90 days in jail. And I shot it at an 8-point. So it's like, yeah, so we got to take it back for all the measurements and this and that. And
don't forget, it gets worse from there. If it's over 140 inches, they charge you by the inch. They consider it a trophy poach. Remember that?
Yeah, I forgot about that. 145
inches, they charge you per inch instead of per point.
And that's their way of dealing with headhunters, people mm-hmm. that would kill a trophy, poaching essentially, mm-hmm. whether at night or whatever, just killing a trophy animal like that. I've heard of people doing it, a lot of people hunting just for the rack. And I know that nobody in this room has that mentality about it, but a lot of people do. So that's their way of trying to curb that bad behavior by posing exponentially larger fines for killing something bigger, more of a trophy.
Now, back in the days when we were in the first starting to go to the UP, they used to, the DNR even knew, the locals, they poach.
Right.
They shoot deer out of season to feed their families or whatever, and they would turn a blind eye to that. I don't know if they do now, but back then they did. But they didn't shoot 160-inch deer. They shot deer to feed their family, kind of type thing. Still against the law? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but back then, I don't think it was as big a deal as it is now.
Right.
Where now, I don't think that they can get away with that. But, I mean, you know, it happens. I mean, in the UP had the largest disappearance of conservation officers in the country at one point in time. So
wow.
Yeah, they did. They would just...
Where'd you go? Well, even still... Gone. No, like, when they came to our house, he was trying to explain to me, too, in the midst of all this. It's like, there's only... two of us that cover what I think was two counties.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge area they got to cover with two dudes.
Right.
You know, at any given time. That's a lot of area. I mean, especially around here with the river and Lake Michigan right there, there's all kinds of fishing violations, I'm sure.
Right, because the DNR, obviously, it's Department of Natural Resources. They're not just worried about people deer hunting. They're worried about people squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting, fishing.
I was an easy case because my dumb ass was on Facebook most of the time.
I was actually watching Northwoods Law, and they had a case just like this with a father-son who were fishing, and they posted pictures online of the 7 fish that they caught or something, and the limit was 5. So it was the same thing. They saw the pictures online. They went to the house knowing the story, talked to the son, talked to the dad, knowing that they had, you know, somebody kept more fish than they were supposed to, and it worked out similar to your situation. It's obviously made for TV, but... If the DNR ever does show up to your house and asks for you by name specifically, know that they're there for a reason. Don't try to outsmart the DNR if you can help it, because it usually doesn't work out well for you.
No, it doesn't. And so they tell me all this about the trophy clause. And he says, well, okay, so we'll be back. We're going to take this in, do the measurement, do whatever, talk to the prosecutor, whoever they had to talk to, I don't know, the whoever else at the DNR. I'm sure.
Sure.
You know,
law enforcement somewhere.
All right. I don't know. I was just scared. That's all I fucking knew. So,
yeah.
They came back. Were you there for the second time they came back too?
I don't think so. I don't think I was there for that one.
Yeah, because said Mr. Rogers wasn't there the second.
No, he wasn't.
It was one of the guys that was there the first time was back, and he was of Asian descent, Oriental descent. So his last name was
17 miles long.
Yeah. I couldn't pronounce it. But he was super nice. He was actually a rookie from the sounds of it. So it was him and another guy. The other guy wasn't as nice as Mr. Rogers. He was an asshole. Not as much of an asshole as he could have been, apparently, because said Oriental fella
right.
informed me that he's being extremely generous right now because he could take me to jail as it is. But they came and they told me what I was being charged with. Gave me this nice little sheet of paper saying I had until October, I think it was 17th, to come in and put in my plea. I forgot exactly what the charge was. Illegal take out of...
Illegal harvesting of a antler deer.
Yeah, something like that. So I had to go back on October 17th so I could hunt until then. I knew once I put in my plea that I was going to be screwed.
Right, you're done.
I was going to be done until I went in for sentencing, and then whatever happened after that happened.
Right.
So I basically had 17 days of the season, so my ass took as much time off of work as I possibly could.
To get in the woods and...
And now you hear me and Adam always preaching about spending time with your stick and your string.
Right.
And practicing constantly. That's where I learned a very, very valuable lesson, because I was hunting in one specific 8-point for those 17 days. And on the last day that I had to hunt, I finally called them in to about... It was between 30 and 35 yards. It was a rough angle, rough shot. I just straight up missed him. I should have made that shot.
How far away was it?
It was between 30 and 35 yards.
Okay.
Tough angle, but I should have.
Still should have, yeah.
I still to this day don't know exactly what the hell happened. If it was karma or what, if God was up there with
karma will get you.
Absolutely.
Some divine intervention came down and moved that arrow. You're gonna sit this out.
That was the beginning of
a lot of things.
Yeah.
I missed that deer, and so I went to court to put in my plea the next day. You know, having that deer on your mind, I mean, that sucks.
Right. Oh yeah, every time.
That's just anybody that's missed, especially a deer that's a good sized deer. It's rough, man.
Yeah, any animal that you
makes
spend,
you want to puke.
If you spent 16 days going after this one deer and you finally get a shot on him, you know, that's a lot of time vested into getting that one animal to have it end up the way that it did. Now it makes a good story, but it also, right. You know, is a bit of a lesson to learn. Or
yeah, absolutely. So that happened. I went and put in my plea, and the judge we had at the time, I'm not going to say his name, but starts with a W in these parts and ends with a Y, and people are...
Yeah.
If you Google him, he's not a very well-liked person.
No.
He's had a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Kind of... Hey,
he's
hypocritical. You fuck up, fine. You pay your penance, do your thing. But
I think when he actually handed out my bond restrictions, he was on tether of some sort. Yep. Yeah,
he was on tether.
Yep,
for cocaine.
Busted at one of the casinos with a large amount of white powdery substance.
Whoops.
Yeah. So my ass goes in to put in my plea with the advice of my counsel. My lawyer that I ended up having to get said plead not guilty, which I was like, I'd never been in trouble before at all, mind you. Like, I had a few traffic tickets, but that's about it. Like, I'd never been in serious trouble, so I'm like, how the fuck does this work? Like, not guilty. I did it. How the fuck do you mean not guilty?
Right.
Like, I shot the fuck. He's like, no,
I already told him.
Right. He's like, just go in and say not guilty. So I did, and he, a $7,500 bond.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I had to pay $750 to stay out of jail right then and there.
Right.
Bond restrictions as follows. I had to be home by 6 p.m. every night. I couldn't leave until 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yep.
No drinking, obviously.
Right.
And just your average, yeah. All that bullshit. Couldn't be in a place that served alcohol.
Couldn't have any fun.
Yeah, and I was coming back for sentencing. It was like at the end of November. And I knew how that went. how the sentencing was going to go, that he was going to throw the book at me and I was going to spend at least some time in jail.
Right.
Probably lose my job. Didn't know how it was going to go over with the family while I was gone. I needed to make sure they were looked after. So I'm talking to Ray. I'm talking to Ryan, Vicky,
mind you, you didn't buy the license because you couldn't afford it. Now you're going to be spending time possibly in jail.
Yeah.
You know, this is compounding the problem. You don't have enough money.
I could have just spent the $50 and been fine, right? Now I'm going to the lawyer, the court fines.
And this is what we learned from this.
Yeah. Yeah, huge learning curve.
Tactical error.
Tactical error.
Nothing is tactical about that.
So, I got to go back in for my sentencing. So I'm trying to get everything kind of squared away in the meantime, making sure the family's going to be taken care of.
Right.
Basically, my boss at the time, she was freaking out because she thought she was like, oh, we'll hire you back. We'll keep your job.
Right.
I'm like, it's like, that's awesome, but... You know,
still going to jail.
I'm still going to fucking jail. Like,
right.
So I was freaking out. The day we went to court, it's like somebody came down and moved that arrow away from that deer.
Yeah.
Some divine intervention. He called in sick that day.
The judge did?
That judge. He was not there that day.
It wasn't for like a cocaine hangover. Like that
was not for like 5 days.
Right. Just speculating. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I can't hand out.
It's wild speculation at this point, but.
It could have been. Who the hell knows?
Right. You know what? For our purposes, it was.
Right. So there, he was, the judge with a cocaine hangover. Didn't come into work that day, so they sent another judge down from St. Joe.
That was a chick. I can't remember what her name was.
I do. I'm not going to say it on here, though.
You know, she was cool.
She was really cool.
A lot nicer than the other guy might have been.
Exactly.
Yeah. It just wasn't him, so I was happy.
Right, right. Yeah,
anybody
no doubt.
Better than him. Yeah. So my lawyer goes in, and him and the prosecuting attorney go in, and they start doing their jiving. And he come back out every now and then and be like, well, they're going to try to call so-and-so.
Right.
And get a hold of him. I remember they called the CO that actually, the Oriental fella, mm-hmm. they called him, and he said he cooperated. I don't think he was being an asshole.
Right.
He made a mistake. So like I said, that's ultimately what saved my ass. I didn't get off scot-free, but...
Being honest helped out in the long run.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Because like I said, they could have took your bow, they could have took your gun, they could have took everything. Anything involved with hunting, they can take.
Oh, right. Yeah. They could take the vehicle that you hauled the deer with. They could, if they wanted to get real shitty, they could come in, you know, go through the things in your house. Like you said, take all the racks, take any...
Out. If there's wild game in there, that even if it's marked a year, they'll take it.
Oh, they asked me where the meat was. It's done been it.
Yeah,
we dig up the septic tank if you want that back.
So, you know, they're jiving in there, and finally it ends up there was, I can't remember who it was, but there was somebody they needed to talk to via phone call, and they couldn't get a hold of them, or they weren't there in the office that day or something, so they had to...
postpone it, or...
Yeah, they had to bring me back. So, then, of course, I'm freaking out, like, oh, great.
Right, because it wasn't bad enough to go in for that, you know, and not know what's going to happen when you get there. You get there, and they kind of mess you around a little bit, string you along.
Got my hopes up.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I got to come back and, you know.
Right.
And I'm thinking he's going to be there. But what they did was, again, some sort of divine intervention. That judge, the asshole, was going to be transferred to St. Joe.
Okay.
To their courts after January 1st that year. So, you know what I mean. So they postponed until after the first of the year.
Purposely put it off until after January.
Yep, it was like January 10th or something was when I had to come back.
That's cool.
That was,
I mean, for you.
Thank God. Also, I came back, and it went pretty smooth, man. I had to give up. I had to give my little spiel to the judge.
Right.
And I just told him, I said, I made a mistake. I definitely learned my lesson. You know, I had to sit out the rest of the fucking season, and nobody knows how hard that shit was on me, man. That fucking shit sucked. I'm like that kid in that meme. With, you know, it's raining outside and the kid's got his face pressed against the window, like, I just want to go outside and play, or whatever the fuck it says. Like, that's, or I just want to go hunting, is what the meme says. That's exactly how I felt, man. It's like, just sitting and watching, man, sitting on my hands. I couldn't do anything.
Right.
you know, the kids weren't old enough to hunt yet, so I couldn't get out and help them. I was just,
you were completely out of options. You couldn't.
I felt helpless. I couldn't do anything, and it just, you know, for years of my life, I spent.
This was something that you dedicated. This is a large part of yourself, who you are as a person. Obviously,
yeah.
Deer, you know, footprints tattooed on your forearm.
Paw prints.
Yeah, you want to be out there doing what you do, having a good time doing it, and they took that away from you because of a mistake that you made.
It was rough, dude. It took a toll on my Cassie's relationship.
Yeah,
I'll admit that it really did. I went in a pretty fucking dark place, to be honest with you. It really sucked. It sucked bad. On top of not being out there, that overhanging cloud of, I don't know what's gonna happen.
Right.
You know, just everything. It was a lot to deal with.
So how did it all end up? What happened?
All they did was, once I gave my spiel, the judge must have felt for me or something, because mm-hmm. he's like, all right, so I was facing roughly $8,000 worth of money I would have to pay the court.
Jesus.
Not including my lawyer fees, 90 days in jail, and 5 years out of the woods. I got basically kind of like time served out of the woods plus the following year.
Right.
So 2 years out of the woods, so I had to sit out the following season too. And I think I paid like $450 in fines, and that was it. I was done. And talk about being thankful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that was huge sigh of relief coming out of there. I mean, it sucked I couldn't hunt the next year.
Well, yeah, but you knew what you sort of understood that was going to be a part of the deal when you got, you know, when mm-hmm. you went into it. Like you said, it could have been a lot worse, and a lot of people say that the measure of a man is how he learns from the mistakes that he makes. Because this happened to you, we're sitting here in the same room with Ray Cole,
yep.
who sort of got turned down to hunting because you couldn't do it. You decided to share your passion with somebody else who didn't know anything about it at the time. And now Ray, as avid as he can be for a two-year veteran, you know, he's got the bug too, and he's teaching that to his son. And there's no telling where it's going to end up in the long run. You know, this is...
And that's ending on a positive note. Like I said, because we're, you know, we started negative and I wanted to end on a positive. And the positive side is, like, we've got through the negative now.
Right.
So I did my time. So now moving into the 2016 season, I couldn't hunt, but I didn't give a shit because my boy was old enough to hunt now.
Right.
So I got to spend all summer watching him and Evan shooting their bows every day.
It sort of gave you a chance to focus more on somebody besides yourself getting ready. Yeah, you know, focus on your kids, helping them get ready. You helped Ray get ready, you know. Did you lent him your bow?
That's exactly how that went down. I think it was like midsummer sometime.
Yeah, nobody does that.
Yeah, right. If you don't know, like people that don't aren't bow hunters and just gun hunt, people with their bows, man.
Generally don't let somebody else.
I don't let anybody else touch
almost
it.
Almost like a vehicle or a girlfriend.
Wife. Yeah, yeah.
You don't just loan that shit out.
Well, it's personalized. If it's exactly. something that you spend all this time practicing with, you know, you've got your own special additions to it. You know, not everybody uses a stabilizer like you have. Not everybody uses a peep sight. Not everybody uses, you know, different pins, this and that and the other thing. So it's all individual. And for you to take essentially a tool that you specialized for yourself and let somebody else use it, that's kind of a big deal. Like Ryan said, it's kind of like letting somebody borrow your truck.
Borrow my girlfriend.
Yeah, borrow your wife or whatever. That's.
Yeah. If I have one, you guys can have one. I don't anymore, so I'm all good.
Yeah, Ryan's single, ladies.
Yes.
So, but no, so, you know, Ray was always talking, like, he always kind of wanted to get into hunting.
Right.
It's just never... Never had a vessel, I guess.
Never had the opportunity or the equipment. Because if you're starting out buying a bow and arrow and going hunting with it...
Buying a bow, just in general, even if you have one like mine, it was a pretty basic setup through Bear. I mean, that's still $750.
Right. It's a lot of money. And then, you know, for somebody who's never done it before, to buy that piece of equipment and then take the time to familiarize yourself with it to be lethal when you don't have, you know, any inspiration to do so on your own is...
Or property, or...
Right, or, you know, land to hunt. So it's kind of a cool thing that you were able to take this unfortunate tactical error and turn it into something positive.
Turn it
for
into a mentoring session for not one, not two, but three people.
Right, your two boys and Ray Cole.
And that was so much fun, because, like I said, dude, I'd pull up from work in the summertime, and... every day, dude. Ethan and his best friend Evan would be in my yard shooting every day. Mm-hmm. And every day and every week, it was like a Thursday or Friday routine. Like right at the end of the week, whenever they feel like they could pull it back easier, they'd right. always want me to crank it up for them. So I'd take the Allen wrenches out and I'd do half a turn.
Dial it in.
You know, just trying to get that poundage cranked up.
Right.
It was just a lot of fun to see them work and work. If they weren't shooting, they were swimming because my dad had told them, Popsy, it's like, you want to pull back a bow? You know, you know, swim, work right. those shoulder muscles.
Right.
So if they weren't shooting, they were swimming.
Getting ready for it.
Evan had a pool, yeah. And he lived just behind us, so they were constantly between the two houses. And that was a lot of fun. And all the off-season work, the food plots, setting up the tree stands, all the scouting. Right. It was just really cool to get him so involved in it. And it was even more cool because it's like, it was for the first time in my life that it wasn't for me.
Right.
I was going for somebody.
So, and how did that turn out?
Ryan's berserkness. He just turned a beer upside down for no reason.
It wasn't open.
It wasn't open. Threw us all off for a minute.
I have Tourette's and stuff. Some things happen.
Ryan's got a slight case of Tourette's. But,
fuck.
So. But it something that negative, you know, a hunting violation like that where you were able to, you lost time in the woods, but you were able to make
that. Yeah, it
was
cool. Like I said, it was the first time in my life. It was not for me that I'm right. doing this shit for. And it was really cool to see them get so excited because everything's for the first time. And that, with you, Ray, with like shooting the bow, like how you were telling me how much better you were getting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, constantly. Because when you first shot it, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, that's to be expected, you know, as somebody who's never pulled a stick and a string back. You
and
know,
it was
it's
his bow, so I didn't want to adjust anything. I didn't right. want to change pins or anything.
Plus, I was here the first time he shot it. I'm sure that I had
a little nervous.
Yes. He actually lost the arrow.
Oh, no.
First shot. Yes. Drew back, right?
Yep.
Which, understandable.
Yeah, it happens, you know.
But what sucks about those arrows are... $7 a piece, eight
probably.
Bucks a piece?
Nice. $90 for six of them.
Yeah.
That's why he only gave me one.
You give me your credit card. Give me your credit card. You can have the whole quiver.
So I was done until I went.
But it ended up being a good thing. You were able to stay in the game as much as you could. You know, still kind of preach that get in the woods mentality and get other people involved in it.
Well, that's where this whole like recruitment thing is. Like my mindset kind of went to is
right.
This is awesome.
Yeah,
like watching you guys get like so the season starts. Like we did all the prep work.
Right,
October 1st hits. Right.
Yep.
All right, so we'll start October 1st. So I'm sitting with Ethan and his tree stand that we, and mind you, we have our flags all marked for yardage.
Right.
He's practiced all summer long. He's put in the time. He's done his food plots. The tree stand's where he wants it to be.
Right. He's got ready the shooting to go. Lanes opened up.
Yep. He is ready to go. 20 minutes after first light. Big Doe comes trotting down from our east, and to our east, and she came down, and she stopped, looked behind her, and then there was this nice little 6-point cruising right behind her, grunting right. the entire way October 1st, which
really
surprised the shit out of me. Yeah.
Exactly. Remember we found all them rubs, and I was like, "What is this, November?" Remember all them
yep.
rubs we found out here? They were all over the place. We're like, "What in the world is going on?"
An early bloomer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
Weird out here.
Yeah, he was grunting up a storm, bat, 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 the entire way in.
Right.
He stood right by Ethan's 30-yard flag.
Nice.
Just like clockwork. Drew back.
And you got to sit there and watch the whole thing go down?
Not only watch, dude, it was so awesome. Because even, like, I could hear his heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I bet he could,
so
too.
Like, he tries to play it off like he's just slick, you know, he's so cool, and yeah. nothing really phases him.
And you're like, yeah, I shot my first deer once, too. I remember.
Right.
I remember, I'll never forget the breaths after he, like, I remember, like, after he shot it, his breathing was so erratic. It was, I was ecstatic, dude. I felt like I just shot my first deer, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was hard not to get emotional, but I didn't want to see my, you know, or my kid to see me cry, so right. I just held that shit in, but.
We don't cry as adults.
Yeah, fuck
it
no.
just doesn't happen.
But that was awesome, dude. That was awesome. And then Evan, 2 weeks later, so he was hunting a property that we all hunt now, all three of us, at his Uncle Phil's, I'll just call it.
Okay.
It's a chunk of property off the west of Buchanan there. And he wasn't having much luck. It sounded like they were hunting, there was a big field. and they were just hunting the edge of that, and they weren't seeing much. There were a couple does here and there.
Right.
But there was a lot of property going back into the hardwoods that his dad, Gary, was telling me about. So we sat down outside of my on my porch one day, and we were going over the aerials on Google Maps or whatever.
Yeah. Google Earth is a...
Google Earth, that's what it was.
An incredible tool.
Yeah, Google. I got the Maps app on my iPhone, and then Google Earth. And yeah, so we find out what would be. He says there's a tree stand in the spot back here that looks pretty good. So the next day we went out there. Ethan was sitting on his own. I sat with Evan, and it was, I don't know. We sat down. It was in the evening, so about 30-40 minutes went by. Nice doe came cruising through.
Right.
And then right after it was. Probably 5 minutes after she came through, a nice 8-point came through, and started grunting him in. You know how it is with them year and a half. So he was a year and a half eight. He was a big year and a half. Dumb, young and dumb.
Quick to come to a call.
Yeah, and it was really cool for Evan because Ethan had been sitting with me for years since I got with his mother.
Okay.
So he knew how to call deer. I mean, he's been around it. Evan, not so much. All he had was YouTube videos to go off of, so it was kind of cool for him to see that. I worked him in. I got him about 15-20 yards, and he drilled him, and got it. It was the same thing, like listening to his heartbeat. Like,
oh yeah,
it was so crazy
being there to be a part of spectator. That special moment. I mean, I remember killing my first deer. You know, the emotions that you go through, and being there as a father for your kids, essentially, you know, that's a beautiful thing, man. And you got to enjoy that more or less because of
a tactical error.
Yeah,
right. Dude, I honestly had more fun that 2016 season than I did all the years that I've been hunting, you know.
Right.
That was so much fun. And it was just as a spectator, just being able to be there with them and coach them. And so those two shot their deer. And this prick over here with my bow. So, how'd your season go?
It started out a little rough. I remember I shot at that doe.
Only one, boys. They're both turning their mics towards them.
We want to hear you.
I shot at a doe. Thought I nailed her, but I missed. And, I mean, there was a little bit of hair.
Right.
There was a little bit of blood on the arrow, but, I mean, it wasn't anything. That one got away.
Right.
Then, you know, after that it was over with. I only have like a quarter of an acre to hunt. So, you know, that was spook town. Once that happened, nothing else came up, nothing showed up. Then my buddy Rick Morrison had some property. He's like, well, you can come out here and hunt. I'm like, all right. So me and Bert went out. We scouted.
Bert is me.
Yeah. Sorry. How many episodes in and we're just now crossing this bridge?
Yeah, I just Brent clear Ruff that up, yeah.
Brent Ruff is Bert.
Sorry. Anyway, so we went out there to Rick's.
We scouted. We're looking around for a place to put a tree stand, and there was actually an aluminum tree stand already up in a tree. And, I mean, it was a
perfect spot.
Yeah, prime spot. I don't think we even cut any limbs down or anything.
We didn't have to, nope.
It was just it.
Nice.
Over a natural watering hole.
Somebody did the hard work for you.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Rick. So he lets me sit out there. I get out there. The first night I'm out there, a doe comes by. I'm like, all right. You know, I get a little antsy, which I had a doe tag, but I figured I'd wait. Something had to be following. It was November 8th. So I figured there had to be a buck in tow. And there was. It was a spike. You know, nothing big, nothing special.
Right.
But being my first time hunting, I'm shooting the son of a bitch.
Absolutely, yes. But I'm surprised. I would have shot a doe myself.
I didn't know if I'd had another opportunity.
So right.
I pulled back, let her fly, and I missed. I went, actually shot low, and I thought I got it because of the sound, but there was a lot of wet sand right there.
Right.
The watering hole. So it sounded good. Got excited. But nope, the son of a bitch mule kick, ran off. Nothing, go check. The arrow's in the sand, no blood, no hair, no nothing. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Which happens. I mean, anybody bow hunting knows what that feeling is like, you know. Yeah.
I think I missed 25 deer before I ever killed one.
Well, absolutely,
sad, for a couple more hours to until, you know, I ran out of daylight, packed it up, and was telling Rick about it, you know, how it went. I'm like, yeah, I messed up. I missed. Shot low. You know, it's easy in the yard when you're, you know, shooting at a target.
Right.
You have everything locked off. Or
looking at a bale of hay or looking at a paper plate or, you know, whatever you're shooting at, a shooting block or.
Like Bert was saying earlier, you know, they had it marked off, yardage marked off.
Right.
Never even thought of that. So I'm just sitting stupid in the tree stand.
Trying to wing
using
it.
My best judgment, yeah. Which obviously wasn't good enough.
Well, you got to, you know, when you're in a tree stand, too, everything looks different than when you're standing on the ground.
Absolutely.
It's a lot closer.
Mm-hmm.
When you're 15 feet in the air, it's like, ah, there's only about 20 yards. No, not really.
And
I'm telling Rick about it. He's laughing. He's like, oh. He's like, well, he had a pool tournament. He shoots pool, so he had a tournament the next day. And he's like, well, you can go ahead and sit out there, you know, tomorrow night, too. I'm like, all right. So I went out there. I was actually sitting in his driveway talking to him, and across the street, a pretty big buck was running through a cornfield, head down, you know, just moving.
Trailing.
Running,
yep.
But, you know,
yep.
He was trotting along, head down, just in it. And Rick's like, you better get your ass out there. So I start stamming around, you know, getting ready, getting my camo on, and everything, run out there. Sitting in the tree, I was out there. God, it seemed like forever. But it was a couple hours, 2.5, maybe 3 hours. And the biggest deer I ever seen, which, I mean, it wasn't much. It was a little 8-point or whatever, 2.5-year-old.
Yeah, he was a good size 8.
8-point. But it was the biggest deer I ever seen, especially that close. And here he comes. So, you know, I get real shaky, adrenaline rush, whatever, rear back. I missed that spike low, so I aimed a little high, and it went over the son of a bitch's back.
Yeah, you'll have that.
And I'm sitting there, and it took a, it didn't really run much. It didn't mule kick or anything. It just looked around, you know, kind of maybe jumped about 3 feet to the side and walked in maybe an 8-foot circle. Looking around, you know, like, what in the hell just happened?
Right.
And it came back right back to where it was.
Again, a young deer.
Yep.
A year and a half year old.
Hornhole.
Yep.
And I'm just sitting there watching it, you know, like an idiot.
Right. Wow. Not knocking another arrow.
I can't believe that deer didn't run off.
Well, hold on. That one, actually, we decided it was 2.5, right?
That's what I said, right? I said 2.5.
Yeah, he just
okay,
said
I'm sorry. Yeah, I said year and a half. That's my bad.
Like,
we'll cover that in the next episode.
The corrections.
Yeah. So.
I'm new, but I, you know, 2.5.
All right, hey. Fork tenders, all I'm saying.
So I missed it, walked around, so I couldn't believe it was still sitting there. So I'm like, maybe you should knock another arrow.
Right.
Let it loose.
Hey, so, Mr. Hunter.
Yep. So I'm fumbling around, making a little bit of noise, obviously, because the son of a bitch, you know, looks up, is looking around. It's like, what is going on? And, you know, it starts trotting off a little bit. I'm like, what do I do? I forgot to mention before that, I was messing around with the call. They kept locking up.
Oh, you know, it would get wet,
conversation, so it would just start squealing like a damn pig. So I'm messing around with it, and I end up dropping it. So I had no call, no nothing. I'm just sitting there, me and Bert's bow. And so I just mouthed, you know, I drew back, following him, and just rat, rat. And he stopped long enough to look, and I let her fly. And, I mean,
I found pay dirt.
Luck or whatever. It was a pretty good shot.
We'll call it
different
sound.
Yeah,
it was a pretty good shot. You know what?
Yes.
It was a great shot. Because
I didn't double lung or anything, but I got along a little bit of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It ran about 30 yards and just dropped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The sound was, you know, Bert kept telling me the sound. I thought when my arrow hit that wet sand, you know, the night before on that spike, that I nailed
right.
it.
Sounds
it
way
was a
different.
Totally different totally sound. Different,
yeah. Like punching a pumpkin or some shit.
Right, like yeah, yeah, like
it's
whacking.
Like Rocky Balboa hitting the side of beef.
Beef, yeah, like whacking a watermelon awesome, with a baseball bat.
I called everybody I knew to come out and help me pack the damn thing.
And that was the best part, because when I showed up, Ray Cole, you do not get very, what's the word, like excited.
Excited, yeah. He doesn't get expressive. Is that he
doesn't
show
break
excitement
too many times.
Very cinematic.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
So I pull up and this motherfucker is like, you can tell like he just wants to get to where that fucking animal is right now. Like, I don't give a fuck what you're doing. You know, let's go,
right.
go. You know,
come on, so, it's out there. Let's go. Come on.
It was
right.
nice. It was the excitement I needed in my life. I think.
And yeah.
I was hooked.
The adrenaline you feel when you get to harvest your first animal is unlike any other. I mean, every deer you shoot is going to be special, but your first one, the very first time you actually make a kill and you do it all by yourself, you know, you're with somebody else's bow in a tree stand, it's so unique to the moment and it's so special that that's the feeling that a lot of times keeps people in, you know, the sport, in hunting, because that's not a feeling that you can replicate anywhere. You can't readily, you know, you can't go to the store and buy a beer and get the same feeling, you know, from drinking or whatever you do. It's so unique, so special that it's
it's one way to get it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Get it, and that's actually do it.
Yep.
And then the I ended up getting a doe too in December with a muzzleloader, and call it what you want. Maybe it wasn't the same deer, but remember I said, you know, like October, early October, I went out there when I started everything off, and I missed that deer. Mm-hmm. And I hit the deer, but it wasn't a kill shot, and I felt bad about that. It was probably karma coming back.
Right.
Because remember I shot that one with the muzzleloader.
That was the one. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I ended up losing the whole rear end. The hindquarters were gone.
Yeah, the whole back half of that deer.
No, you lost everything but the hindquarters.
Oh, you're right. Yep.
Because when we got done skinning that deer out, and all that was left was two hindquarters. That was
The
back straps were gone.
The infection.
What had happened with that arrow was it raked her back and left a nasty cut. Yep, split her open, and it got infected, which is right by that back strap, which we talk about primo cuts. Back straps are gone. Tenderloins were gone. The shoulders of that. I remember, like, just the meat, like me and Craig and TJ, and we were like, you could feel it, just felt knotty.
Yeah.
When you get a knot in your back, like it's the same thing.
Tough.
Yeah.
Just,
it was a weird looking color. It didn't smell weird, but it just something wasn't right.
But it made me pay a lot more attention to shot placement and being sure of the shot, you know, instead of just taking stupid shots out there, you know, green. My first time, I would just
shoot. And these are lessons that you don't learn unless you actually spend time in the field doing it. You know, this isn't something that you can read in a book. I mean, you'll hear us talk about it, but until you actually go out and do it, if you make a bad shot, you know, if you don't make a bad shot, if you make a good shot, these are things that you have to experience for yourself. You're not going to find, for example, listening to a podcast, sitting on your couch, watching TV, any of that. So get out and do it, man. You know, get out and try it.
Trial and error.
And grab your kids, because that was the best part of, like, this tactical error.
Yeah.
Was, you know, I got watching the two boys shoot their first bucks was awesome. They're hooked for life. You know, Ray doing his thing, using my bow, getting him involved in it, which is awesome. And then
the
your kid.
Right.
Which and is
what,
awesome.
What happened with him?
He was only 10, so he's not.
We talked about it vaguely, or, you know, in episode 4.
Yeah, we brought it up a little bit, but.
Yeah, and that was during bow season 2, right? But that was with a crossbow.
Right. Because I didn't feel good, you know, giving him. I don't think he could pull back with enough weight to actually.
Kill it.
So I didn't want to take that chance. And so, I mean, my mom, for Christmas, you know, she's like talking about getting me a crossbow or whatever. I'm like, well, I'm not an old man. I don't need a damn crossbow.
Right.
You know? Already bought a bow, so she was just trying to, you know, help me out or whatever, just to see how passionate I got about hunting.
As a disclaimer, there's nothing wrong with shooting a crossbow.
No,
I want to put that out there.
No.
You don't have to be an old man
really
to use one.
Now, like we talked roughly, we'll crawl next episode. We got a loose ends episode next
coming up.
Sorry if I offended you.
but
I didn't feel that I wanted a crossbow hunt.
Right.
So I told her no, and then I immediately, I think like 2 days later, I called her back and I'm like, get that crossbow. Because Alex can't, you know, Alex and Stella want to hunt. They can't pull back a bow. You know, I don't feel comfortable with it, so.
Right.
And that's just more time, because to bow hunt, you get October 1st through January 1st, basically.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you can bow hunt.
It's more of a challenge than.
And deer act different. I mean, you want them to be out there looking at, you know, how they're acting. Because a deer in October will act, a buck in October will act completely different than a buck in November.
Absolutely, yeah. It, especially after, like, November 15th. I find it strange enough to talk about that November 15th, deer will act a certain way. November 16th, after opening day comes, you know, and goes, deer react entirely different.
Oh,
if you're dealing with deer that have been around for a couple years, every deer out there knows opening day. Every deer out there knows what happens when the bullets start flying,
right.
And they get a lot harder to hunt after that. It's unless they're a year old, you know, a year and a half old, where they don't know any better, know any different. A lot of deer will get either, you know, midnight-itis or whatever after the opening day.
Midnight-itis, like, yeah. So they go nocturnal.
Right, exactly, yeah.
These fools are shooting at us.
Right. I ain't coming out in the daylight. Park. Exactly. And
how fine that doe is. I'm
but even as far as reacting to calls and such, like, it's a completely different
It ball becomes game. A much harder ball
you,
game.
You can get the oldest, smartest buck in the woods to react to a basic grunt call.
Right.
In November, that he wouldn't even think about acting on, you know, in early the second December. Or third week of November or October or whatever.
Right.
It's all different. But, so,
thank you.
And he got one this year, right? His doe?
Last year.
Right.
Yep. With the crossbow?
Right.
And we weren't, we were going to save those until, you know, the end of the season, try to get the bucks first.
Mm-hmm.
Hit a doe, you know, later on, whatever. Well, my new neighbor, thank you very much, Adam,
hey,
for moving out.
I told you, you know what?
Way to go.
What was it, episode 4? We talk about why I had to move. Thank your wife.
The son of a bitch put his tree stand 30 yards it away was from five. Mine. 30 yards away from mine.
Yeah.
So I got scared. You know, I panicked. Right. I'm like, oh, God. Like, he's going to shoot my deer.
Your deer.
Alex's deer. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm like, you know what? We're going out October 1st, and whatever walks in front of you, dude, you're going to nail it.
Get the
job
done.
Got a buck tag, got a doe tag.
Right.
So we're covered. Like, whatever walks in front of you, you know, kill it.
Right,
it's dead.
Right. And he did.
And he did. Yeah, we went out October 1st. It was hot as shit. So I go out October 1st. We sat out there for 3 or 4 hours. Nothing. You know, just sweating, hot, bullshit.
Global warming.
Yeah. So the next day, he's bugging me about going back out. And I'm like, it's too hot. I'm like, I don't want to go out. I don't even feel like going out. But he's, you know, just pestering me. I'm like, fine, we'll go out. If you want to go out, we'll go out. But same thing, you know, as last night. There's not going to be anything out there. It's too
right,
hot. It's
right.
Bullshit. So we get out there, and we're out there for about 20 minutes, and I see 4 deer walking up. I'm like, holy shit.
Holy Jesus.
Because we're in a two-man stand. He's on my left. He can't, you know, he can't see around.
Coming from the right.
My fat ass. Yeah.
Oh.
So, but they come up on my side from behind. And I'm telling him to be quiet and shit. You know,
right.
I wouldn't say he's cocky, but he's pretty confident.
He's self-assured without being egotistical.
Asshole,
yeah.
He's quiet, talks with his, you know.
He doesn't
get
nervous, you know.
Right.
About anything, really. And he's always, you know, like, oh, I'm getting, I'm like, I got pretty shaky, you know.
Yeah, oh, no. And if you ever been out in the woods hunting.
So when that deer walks out in front of you,
that time your first deer walks up and you actually have a chance to shoot at it, they call it buck fever, but I don't care if it's a doe. Any deer, any animal you see when you're in the stand.
I've got shaky with a lot of does.
Yeah, it happens.
So it took about 15 or 20 more minutes just for them to
work around.
The ones kind of stomping. I'm like, oh, God, you know, just be still, don't move.
Right.
They finally, you know, gave up on us, walked around.
Quit right smelling so bad.
About 18 yards right in front of us, there was four of them ended up walking out. And you could tell the moment that big doe walked out, I could feel my arm shaking.
Yeah.
But it wasn't me.
It was
I wasn't
him.
Shaking because I wasn't on the spot.
He's right.
Like, I
turned
over and he's sitting there shaking his ass off. He's got the crossbow. He's shaking.
Getting peach seeds.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, swamp people, shoot him.
Shoot him, Clint.
Yeah. Whenever you get a shot, shoot him. Like, no, I'm serious. Shoot him.
Right.
Oh, really?
Pull the trigger.
How about now?
Give me that crossbow.
He was shaking. Oh, he made a great shot.
Oh, he drew
that's
the
awesome.
Shit out of her.
Double on that one.
Yeah, he got her good. She didn't go very far either.
10 years old.
Boom. Oh. And
got
so,
this is the culmination of, actually, to bring it around, this is what happens when Bert gets caught. making a slight tactical error.
Well, huge tactical error.
It was like a $50 mistake that cost you quite a bit more than that.
Yeah. So, like, 2016 came and went, and, like, I'm all...
Because I wouldn't be hunting still. I'd probably still have excuses, like, well, I don't have enough property, or this, or that.
Right.
Or the equipment, all that. And you took all those away. And
that's probably for a different episode, but it really doesn't matter how much property you have, as long as you're a certain distance away from a dwelling or whatever. As long as you're within the rules and regulations that the DNR put in the book, you can hunt on a half acre. You know, you can hunt. It's how bad you want to do it. It's how much work you want to put into doing it with anything. It's the passion that you have for it and the love that you have for what you're doing that propels you to do it. So, you know, and you got the bug now.
Even more passion now that my kids are into it.
Absolutely,
And that's what's so awesome.
It makes our bond stronger.
Right, it did. It brought us a lot closer.
Right. You with your kids or?
Yeah, absolutely. and honestly, it's brought me and you a lot closer.
Well, because, it has just.
Because full circle, this podcast, there's a lot of reasons we always give why this podcast is here. But like the ultimate number one reason is that mistake. Because what happened after that 2016 came and went, okay, so January 1st hint. It hit, and then I could hunt again. I was officially a critter getter, you know. I could get back at him, so that's when I started trapping because I was so anxious to get back out.
Right.
So I started doing that, and then I started learning new shit, and I'm like, man, this is cool. So then it went from, you know, I got you into it, you got your kid into it, my kids were into it. Now what?
Yeah. Right.
Now what do we do?
You got the passion.
I don't like that. Yeah, was awesome. Yeah, I want
common with said neighbor.
Yeah. So yeah, it's nice now. I don't have to bring the meat across the tree line. I can show up, and he's already got the meat here at the house. So
I can give my wife meat.
That's right, yeah. So and your relationship with her has been a lot better since I moved away.
So I started thinking, like, what do we do? Like, do I start get like I consider giving speeches at like these hunter safety.
Mm-hmm.
To like talk about like don't do what I did because I was an idiot and I never really thought about where this money because when you start reading in where all of our funds go for the base licenses and all of our tags and all it feeds
it's
right back
deal.
Into us.
Yeah,
it's all for us.
Yeah,
like you're doing yourself a disfavor if you're not
the DNR don't usually have a very good budget to begin with, and a lot of their money is produced from people buying tags, whether it's a fishing tag or, you know, a deer tag or just a base license. All of that money goes back into the state, and it's not, you know, the DNR officers themselves don't get the money. It goes back into conservation programs. It goes back into educating people.
Why do you
about,
think we can hunting turkeys right now is so plentiful?
Exactly. Yeah, it goes back into, you know,
wolves,
public education, you know, about things that we might not know about otherwise. And the DNR isn't always going to be the end all be all source of, you know, empirical wisdom or whatever, but they're here to help us.
They're not the bad guy.
Right. They actually,
exactly.
They absolutely exactly. are
which
the good
is,
guys.
Which is, that was the big thing. Cause like when I first got busted, Ryan, you know this.
Yeah.
Tree police. Goddamn. I was bitter, dude.
But
really bitter.
And that's the natural reaction you have when you get caught doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You want to blame everybody but yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only over a matter of time that you actually get to learn to accept what you did as a mistake. And as a man, you took that mistake and transformed it into education. And here we are doing a podcast now because you want to continue that education. And, you know, is
that's exactly it. Because that's people buy your tags, follow the rules.
Yeah.
And because I can guarantee you, I can promise you, there's probably 3 out of every 5 of the people listening.
Yeah.
Probably are poaching on a regular basis.
All 5 of you that are listening.
Right. Yeah. Jesus. You
know,
no, what I
but
mean. Yeah, seriously, I'm sure there's quite a few of you that are either not buying tags or, you know, like we said about the tag pool when you go up to deer camp or something.
Very generally,
just do it right.
Anywhere you buy a tag, there's going to be like a stand that has pamphlets that the DNR provide that outline, you know, all the rules and regulations, the season length, the season limit, you know, the special notes that they might have about it, whether it's turkey, small game, deer. Specifically like antlerless deer, they have a specific digest for that.
Oh, yeah.
So the information is there.
Too. You need to look at
every year is a little bit different. So pick up the literature, you know, spend some time educating yourself into what the rules and regulations are so that you don't end up making a tactical error.
Yeah, yeah, this ended up on a good note with,
yeah,
you know, that we're sitting here with this podcast now.
It started off bad, but it ended up
right.
being a good thing for not just you, but now it's me. You've pulled me into it. Ray's been a big part of it. Ryan's here now. You know, this is a community that we're building out of people that listen to it and also people that are a part of it.
I want people to learn from my mistake. Don't make the same mistake, because it sucked. I'm happy now. I'm back out in the woods. I'm a getter. Everything's great.
Getting grounded is never fun. But
no, it sucks.
It's a necessary part of life.
Very avoidable.
Absolutely avoidable. But if you can learn from it and be a better person on the backside of it, then so much the better. So,
on that note, I think we can wrap this thing up.
Thank you guys for listening. Thank everybody that's been a part of it so far. And get a hold of us if you got any stories of your own that you want to share with us. Email.
Yeah, we got a email, racksfursandfeathers@gmail.com. Look us up at Twitter at RFFpodcast. Facebook, Racks, Fur, and Feathers. Like I said in episode 6 there, the best way to get a hold of us is at the email. You fuckers.
Put the knife down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put the knife down.
On that note, thanks for listening, guys.
We'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. And there you have it. Hopefully this episode will make those of you who are planning on tiptoeing around the law next season and not buying your tags, hopefully this will make you think twice. Seriously, don't do it. It's not worth it. Learn from my mistake. And all that money circles right back around to us hunters and fishermen anyway, so it doesn't even make sense not to buy a tag, right? You're just hurting yourself. So be a legal beagle. Buy your tags, everybody. Do it. Next episode, we'll be joined by Ryan Johnson again for our Loose Ends and Corrections episode. We had some loose ends in other episodes where we started to talk about something and then had to stop because we were on something else, so we went down the rabbit hole with some of those. Also had some corrections that we needed to square up on where we misspoke or overspoke, so we took care of some of those as well. Also, at the end of June, we're going to be sitting down with Chuck Powell again to talk muskrat and beaver trapping, so definitely keep your ears to the ground for that one. And also, I mentioned it at the end of the last episode, but in the end of July, we're going to be driving all the way up to Marquette, Michigan in the UP to sit down with Kevin Swanson, who is the Bear and Wolf Program Specialist for the Michigan DNR. We have all kinds of questions for him. I just posted recently in the group page that the wolves might be delisted here in the Great Lakes area, which is Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan. So that is a huge deal. So we're going to see where we stand politically with these things, as well as get into some taxonomy issues and square up on some of those. If you guys have any questions for us to ask Kevin, please shoot us an email at racksfurandfeathers@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook at racksfurandfeathers. Or Twitter at RFF Podcast. And as always, editing is done by the Kyle Palmoner, and all music and artwork is done by Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com and the Root Note Podcast. Hopefully everybody's staying cool, staying safe, keep your ears to the ground, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody.